this visit that I'm making to Hyderabad, ISKCON, I selected as a theme to discuss from the 9th chapter of the first canto Srimad Bhagavatam, where Grandfather Bhishma is imparting instructions to Maharaj Yudhisthira. That's the theme. Friday night, today's Sunday feast lecture, again Monday and Tuesday evening, starting at 6:30 in the conference hall over there. Four parts. And as I explained on Friday, the inspiration in part was just a few weeks ago while visiting Vrindavan, I gave a several-part seminar on the 8th chapter of the first canto, Teachings of Queen Kunti. And it was so nice. I wanted to keep moving. There are some very well-known sections of Srimad Bhagavatam, very much loved sections of the Bhagavatam. And there's a reason why. They're very rich and full of meaning and inspiration and instruction and so exciting. And Grandfather Bhishma and his relationship with the Pandavas and his instructions to Maharaj Yudhisthira and his passing from this world and his intimate relationship with Krishna, they're all very fascinating and very educational. We can learn so much from the detailed descriptions that we find in Srimad Bhagavatam about such great personalities. So, that's this visit to Hyderabad, is Grandfather Bhishma. So I mentioned on Friday evening, and I'll mention it again today, the most superlative outstanding feature of Grandfather Bhishma, something you could say about anybody, is that Grandfather Bhishma was, like our discussion this afternoon, anyavilashita shunyam jnanakar. He was unalloyed devotee of Krishna. He knew nothing but Krishna. For him, Krishna was everything. And thus, Bhishma was everything for Krishna. Yet he's a very mysterious personality. In many ways, we mentioned, he fought opposite the Pandavas. So I'm going to spend some time today describing a lesser, much lesser, glory of Grandfather Bhishma. But it's relevant. It's mentioned in the verses of the 9th chapter of the 8th, of first canto, that Grandfather Bhishma was previously one of the 8 Vasus. So, who are the Vasus anyways? I spent some time doing some research, and there's not a lot of information about the Vasus. I'll share with you some of the things that I discovered. Madhvacharya, great Acharya in the Brahma Sampradaya, he described that amongst the demigods, there are 3 principal categories under whom all the other 33 million demigods fall. There's the sons of Aditi, the Adityas. That's one of 3 groups. And the Vasus is another group. And the Rudras are another group. And all of the other 33 million demigods are under those 3 categories. The Vasus, they're sons of one of the daughters of Daksha. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find Prajapati Daksha, part two. Part two because there was a Daksha who was previously cursed and lost his head and had a goat's head put on. This is a different appearance of Daksha in Satya Yuga. Later, Daksha appears again in the sixth canto. Two manus later, Daksha part two. This is the Daksha who cursed Narada. Daksha had so many sons, 10,000 sons, Haryashvas and Savamashvas, and they all became members of Narada's Brahmacharya ashram. And Daksha was very, very angry with Narada. So he cursed Narada. He called him bad names first. Then he cursed him that he would not be able to stay any place for more than a few days. And Narada's response, let him go. Traveling Sankirtan ki jai. And then the next children that were produced by Daksha were daughters. And of these daughters, some of the daughters produced Vasu, and Vasu's eight sons were Vasus. They include Agni, the presiding deity of fire, the presiding deity of the four directions. His name was Aha. Aha. Presiding deity of four directions. And Vasava, who's also known as Indra. So somehow Indra appears as in the Aditya list as well as the... because there's different times for different Indras. Anyway. And so forth. Drona is listed as one of the Vasus. And when you read very carefully in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find when Krishna is speaking to Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house of Kamsa, Krishna says that previously you were Drona. That's a detailed thing which I won't go into. Very interesting, detailed description. The Vasus are very powerful. When Krishna spoke with Uddhava in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you know who was Uddhava, right? Uddhava? Uddhava was also a Vasu. He addresses him, O Vasu. Meaning, before he was Uddhava, he was also a Vasu. And Uddhava is a great devotee of Krishna. Outside of Vrindavan, Uddhava was the greatest devotee of Krishna. And that's a very significant statement. More than the Pandavas, more than the Yadus, more than Ugrasena. Uddhava, he was a Vasu. The Vasus are a very, very special category. I'll describe in a little while an incident where Bhishma was in a battle with Lord Parashuram. You know who Parashuram is? With his chopper. He's an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. 21 times traveling through all the land, he annihilated or sent from this land all kings. Bhishma was also in a Kshatriya birth. Bhishma defeated Parashuram. Parashuram's father, what was Parashuram's father's name? Janmadagni. Janmadagni came on the battlefield and said, Parashuram, stop. This person is a Vasu. He's appeared as Bhishma, but you won't be able to kill him. So put down your weapons. Stop. because of the order of his father, Parashuram stopped. When Parashuram put down his weapons, Bhishma put down his weapons and came and fell at the feet of his spiritual master, his military guru, Parashuram. I'll explain this in a while. But because of his position of Vasu, he was so powerful. Meaning he had the capacity like the demigods. And even amongst the demigods, most powerful. So, Grandfather Bhishma, even by these material considerations, what to speak of his spiritual position, Bhishma is very great. In the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that Grandfather Bhishma is listed amongst the 12 Mahajans, the great authorities throughout all the history of existence, that are the foremost authorities in understanding principles of Dharma. Grandfather Bhishma. Spiritually, materially, militarily, wisdom, virtue, Grandfather Bhishma. Great personality. And he appears, of course, in Mahabharata, but he's appearing in this ninth chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm going to give you a little bit of the background of how Bhishma, who was previously a Vasu, came to this world. Grandfather Bhishma appeared in the Moon Dynasty. Prabhupada explained like this. In this world, there are two divine dynasties, the Sun Dynasty and the Moon Dynasty, Chandra Dynasty and Surya Dynasty. That means, just like Krishna describes the Surya Dynasty in Bhagavad Gita, the Sun Dynasty is Krishna instructed the Sun God Vivaswan in the science of devotion. Vivaswan instructed his son Manu. Manu instructed Ikshvaku, who brought that science from the sun to the earth and created the Sun Dynasty, Surya Dynasty. And in addition to the, so there's a divine lineage of kings coming from the Surya Dynasty in this world. Or there was. And there was a Moon Dynasty also, divine descent of lineage of kings. Grandfather Bhishma appeared in that Chandra Dynasty of kings. Bhishma's father was who? Santanu. Santanu. And Bhishma's mother was Ganga Devi. So how is it that Ganga Devi, who resides in the celestial realm, was here on earth? The description is found in Mahabharata as follows. Santanu, in his previous life, his name was Maha Abhishek. And Maha Abhishek, by his spiritual practices, he achieved the kingdom of heaven. Doesn't say what name he was known as, but Maha Abhishek. And in the kingdom of heaven, one day he was visiting in Brahmalok. And on Brahmalok, it so happened at the same time was Ganga Devi. And as he was before Lord Brahma, and Ganga Devi was also there, a celestial breeze came, and some of the garments of Ganga Devi revealed parts of her form. And very inappropriately, Maha Abhishek glanced at the form of Ganga Devi. And Ganga Devi saw the glance of Maha Abhishek, and she returned the glance. Brahma saw the whole thing happening. And Brahma became very displeased with both of them and cursed them. You leave the heavenly realms, and you take birth on earth for this inappropriate behavior. And both Ganga and Mahaabhishek pleaded with Brahma for leniency. So Brahma said, very well, when you take birth on earth, it will be for the duration of time that the 8 vasus who will be born will become your sons, and one by one, as they return to the heavenly realm, you will be relieved of this curse, specifically to Ganga. So Ganga Devi took birth on earth in a form, very, very beautiful female form, residing in the forested area near the banks of the Ganges. One day, one king in the Chandra dynasty, the father of Santanu, his name was Pratipa. Pratipa was in the forest, and as he approached the river Ganga, he saw the form of Ganga Devi. And he was very attracted. He sat down by the bank of the river, and Ganga Devi approached him. And Ganga Devi sat on his right leg and requested that she accept him as her wife. She requested him to accept her as his wife. And Pratipa said, when a woman sits on the man's right leg, this indicates this is the position of the daughter-in-law. So later on, I will have one son, and you can marry my son. And so after some time, Pratipa had one son named Santanu. And a similar series of events unfolded. Mahabharata describes all this. Santanu, one day, he went to the Ganga. He saw Ganga Devi and such a beautiful maiden. He immediately became attracted and requested her to accept him and to become her his wife. Ganga Devi, knowing the prophecy of Pratipa, that this was Pratipa's son, she agreed on one condition. Ladies and men who are married in the audience, listen to this condition. That you will never speak a word that will make me angry. On that condition, I will marry you. Santana agreed. I will never speak a word that will make you please marry me. And so, they became married. Santanu and Ganga, the first wife of Santanu, was Ganga. So, meanwhile, put all that on hold, and we're going to go over here for a moment. In the heavenly realm, the 8 vasus, along with their wives, were visiting the sage Vasishtha, Vasishtha Muni. And Vasishtha Muni has one very attractive, must be very attractive, because Vishwamitra also wanted the wife of one of the vasus named Jo, requested her husband, can you get that Kamandevu for me? Please. And so Jo went to the other vasus and they conspired and they approached Vasishtha. Vasishtha said no, so they stole the cow. Vasishtha cursed them for stealing the property of a brahmana. How abominable. I curse you. You take birth on earth. Oh, please, please, we're so sorry, we're so sorry. All right. All of you, just after you take birth, listen carefully, just after you take birth, you will again return here. Except for this one, Dio, who actually did the stealing. You have to stay on earth for a long time. That's Bhishma. So now back to Santanu and Ganga. One by one, sons were born. First, seven sons. After each son was born, Ganga Devi took the son. In the sight of her husband, the father of the children, and took the son and threw the son in the river, Ganga. Didn't say a word. Not a displeasing word. Seven times this happened. When the eighth son was born, finally, Santanu couldn't help himself. Please, Ganga, don't do this. She became angry. You spoke in a displeasing word. I'm leaving. That was the promise. He broke the promise, and she took that newborn son, who she named Devavrata, who later became known as Bhishma, and she went into the forest. And there, in the forest, for 32 years, Vasishta and Ganga trained Devavrata and all of the Kshatriya arts and skills, including Parashuram trained Devavrata in the art of military fighting. So just like Dronacharya was the military guru of Arjuna, Parashuram was the military guru of Bhishma. Then after 32 years of not seeing his son, Santanu came back to that same place where Ganga had disappeared, and he saw one young man with his arms outstretched, stopping the flow of the river Ganga like a dam, just stopping the river. So he thought, this maybe is my son. So he approached, and as he approached, the boy or young man disappeared. They began sobbing and weeping and prayed fervently, called out to Ganga, please return my son. So Ganga appeared, returned Devavrata in his custody. Here is your son, I'm now leaving. And Ganga was gone. So the first seven sons, they returned to their position as Vasus in the heavenly realm, but the eighth, Jo, who was the oldest and like the leader amongst them, he remained as Devavrata. And he was extremely powerful, extremely virtuous, extremely wise, so qualified as the son of Santanu. Now, I'm going to go into less detail of the next very well known, how Devavrata became known as Bhishma. I think we'll better do our translations at this point. So Ganga Devi was the first wife of Santanu, and the one son, the eighth son, survived, and his name is Devavrata. How he became known as Bhishma, I'll now describe that. One day when Santanu was traveling in his kingdom, he captured the scent of a very amazing fragrance of musk that was traveling, according to Mahabharata, for one yojana, or 8 miles. The scent was coming from the body of the daughter of a fisherman. And her name was Satyavati. So how Satyavati came to have an incredible fragrance and incredible beauty and wonderful qualities, although she was the daughter of a fisherman, is described by Vyasadeva in Mahabharata. and I'm now going to share that with you. How did Satyavati take her position as the daughter of a fisherman? The mother of Satyavati was previously an apsara, and the apsara's name was Andrika, and her father's name was Uparichara. So Vyasadeva describes that Uparichara was a great king, and he underwent many religious practices so that he became very pure, and he became very powerful, and in course of time, through military conquest, he took over the kingdom of Chedi. So became Chedi Raj. Upaichara. After some time, this king, Upaichara, his spiritual interests grew and grew, and he left his royal palace, he left his royal opulence, he went to the forest, and he began undergoing austerities and penances for further purification. News of this king's great attainment entered into the heavenly region, and King Indra started getting nervous. King Indra was thinking, he may be trying to take over my kingdom. I'm quick, better do something. So he decided, in this case, diplomacy was the best. He came before King Uchaisrava, who was engaged in his austerities, and he indicated to the king, "You have pleased me very much by your great austerities and penances. How powerful, how wonderful, how pious you have become. I would like to offer you a benediction. I would like to give you material boons so that you get absorbed in these material boons and forget your penances and austerities and becoming so powerful. In fact, I'd like to give you three boons, three benedictions. I'd like to give you a celestial chariot made of crystal by which you can travel soaring through space wherever you'd like to go, and you can enjoy heavenly pleasures wherever you go." That was one. "And I'd also like to give you a garland of celestial lotuses. And if you are wearing this garland of celestial lotuses, fragrance will go in all directions, and no one who attacks you with weapons will be able to harm you. You'll be invincible." Isn't that nice? "Let me give you a third benediction. I'd like to give you the special danda, a bamboo rod. And if you place a flag on the top of the bamboo rod, whichever deva you call will come and give you his benedictions." Isn't that nice? And the king was very, very pleased. A little materially attracted, too much pleased. Indra's tactic worked. And Upaichara took the danda, placed it in the ground, put a flag indicating Lord Indra, and he worshipped Indra. So Indra was very successful in this plan. He became a great devotee of Indra. And as he became a great devotee of Indra, Indra indicated, "There is some service I have for you. There are some terrible demons that are giving disturbance. Can you go and annihilate them? Make sure you wear your nice garland. Then you won't have any problem." So he agreed, but there was some reluctance on his part also, because Upaichara had been taking this crystal celestial chariot, and he was traveling, soaring here and there, and he came across one mountain that had captured a river and was crushing and holding captive the river. And somehow the king could understand what the mountain was doing, And so with his foot he kicked the mountain. And then the mountain gave release to the river, and from the river came two children, a boy and a girl. And the boy he put in charge of his military, and the girl, he decided he would marry her, and her name was Girika, and she was so enchanting and so charming that the king was just anticipating the opportunity to be with his new queen. So Indra, just when Indra had given this command or request to go do some battle with some demoniac personalities, just at the time when he was supposed to be having union with his queen. So he was sitting in a solitary place, pining and lamenting and meditating upon his queen. And he saw one hawk. And he saw, so he spoke with the hawk. And he said, "I'm so much desiring to be with Girika. Can you please take my semen and give it to her so that she will be able to conceive a child of me, from me?" So the hawk took the semen, but while the hawk was flying in the air, another hawk thought that maybe this hawk had some flesh and started attacking that hawk that was flying in the air. And so the semen was dropped just as he was passing over a lake, and within the lake was a fish who was a cursed apsara, who became the mother of Satyavati. There's some detail about the curse of the apsara. And so the apsara, she understood she would be released from her curse of being a fish when she gave birth to two humans. So she rose to the surface of the water, swallowed the semen of the king, and after gestation period, a fisherman caught that fish. And when he opened up the fish, he saw two humans, a boy and a girl. The girl was Satyavati, and the boy he named Matsya. But the girl, so the Matsya, he made him king of the Matsya province. He called him Matsya. And he called the girl Matsya Gandhi. She smelled like a fish. And said to the fisherman, "You keep her. I think this is appropriate." So in this way, Satyavati became the daughter of a fisherman. But the fisherman was a pious fisherman, and he wanted his daughter to gain further piety. And so he requested his daughter, in addition to assisting him in his duties, that she take the position of conducting a boat across the river Jamuna. And perhaps one day, one sadhu would come crossing the river Jamuna, and he might give you some blessings, and this way this will be very nice. You get the blessings of a sadhu. You do some seva to a sadhu and get some blessings from a sadhu. So you take this service. To assist her father, or her stepfather, she accepted this position, and one day Parashara Muni wanted to cross the Jamuna. He got on Satyavati's boat, and although she smelled fishy, she was very qualified. The daughter of an apsara and a great pious king. She was very beautiful, very charming, very wise, very shy. And Parashara Muni was doing some astronomical calculation, and he was calculating, aha, this is the time for an incarnation of the Lord to appear, just now. In fact, time has almost elapsed. So he proposed to Satyavati, "You become the mother and I'll be the father of this incarnation of the Lord. Let's go." Satyavati said, "Parashara Muni, you're a great sage, but how is this possible? Please consider, on both banks of the river, there's so many sages. ashram when he said, don't worry, I have mystic powers. I'll create a fog so no one can see. But Parashara Muni, here we are in this boat. Don't worry, by my mystic powers, I'll create an island. We'll go to the island and you can conceive the child there. But Parashara Muni, I'm not married and it won't look so good if I'm walking around pregnant for some number of months. And don't worry, your pregnancy will be complete instantly. Practically as soon as the pregnancy is conceived, the child will be born. But Parashara Muni, I'm not married. I'll lose my virginity. Don't worry, you will maintain your virginity. I'm Parashara Muni. I can do these things. You're Parashara Muni. What can I do? And so he then gave her a special benediction. Two benedictions. This bad fishy smell that kind of isn't nice with all the rest of you, I grant you the benediction that your bodily fragrance will be as attractive as that of the most attractive celestial fragrance of musk. And the second benediction is the one of the sons who will be born by you will become king. So that was enough. Satyavati agreed. Vyasadeva was conceived by Parashara Muni and Satyavati, and practically instantly a young boy appeared before Satyavati with folded hands. Vyasadeva indicated, I must go now, but because you are my mother, I give you this benediction. If you ever need me in any circumstance of life, you just meditate upon me, call my name, and immediately I'll be there. And off he went. And off Parashara went. And off Satyavati went, back to tell her father the good news. At least half of the good news. She didn't say that Vyasadeva was conceived. She said, I met Parashara Muni, and just as you wanted, he gave me these benedictions. Smell the fragrance. Not fishy, but very nice. And the second benediction is, the son that will be born by me will become king. So the fisherman was very happy. My daughter will bear a king. Continue with this practice of plying the boat. It's a good program. Let's see what else happens. So one day, Santanu, the father of Bhishma, or Devavrata, was traveling in the area of the Jamuna River, and he came across the fisherman's home, and from a distance he smelled the fragrance of musk, and he traveled to follow that fragrance, and he came to the home of the fisherman. And inside he saw the beautiful daughter, Satyavati. And instantly he became attracted to marry this girl. And the fisherman said, no, no, you cannot marry my daughter. Why not? I'm the king. You're a fisherman. I'm offering to marry your daughter. Said, because my daughter has the benediction that her son will become king. And you already have a son. He will become king. So you cannot marry my daughter. I'm sorry. See you later. Close the door. Santana was devastated. Cupid's arrow had struck, but he could not marry the girl of his heart's desire. So he went back to the kingdom. One unhappy Santanu. He just sat and sulked. He had no appetite. He couldn't do his duties. Romance, you know. And it was the talk of the palace. Something's wrong with Santanu. So Devavrata, or Bhishma, he inquired from the ministers. What happened? He came to know what happened, then he immediately went to the home of the fisherman. And he pleaded with the fisherman, please change your mind. No, I won't change my mind. My daughter cannot marry your father, because my daughter's son will become king. And you were already the firstborn son, so you'll become king. No deal. So Bhishma then said, very well, I will not become king. Now will you marry, allow your daughter to marry my father? And the fisherman said, no. Because you may not become king, but if you marry and you have a son and that son is born first, then he'll become king, not Satyavati's son. So Devavrata said, very well, in addition to not becoming king, I'll not marry. I'll stay brahmachari my whole life. And then the fisherman said, very well, my daughter can marry your father. So because of that vow, Bhishma became known as Bhishma, strong vow of celibacy, lifelong celibacy for a king, which meant that he could not become king, nor would he have children, nor would he have a queen. So grandfather Bhishma was maintained by the royal family, by Santanu, and then in turn the sons that were born of Santanu and Satyavati, Chitrangada and Vichitravirya were the two sons, who later became kings and both died, and there's another long story which I won't go into. Bhishma made the arrangements, although he was brahmachari, he made the arrangements for the marriages of Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. That's all described in detail. Because he had taken this vow, that's what was the cause of the battle between himself and Parashuram. Because when there were three daughters, Amba Ambika and Ambalika, who were to become, their Swayambar was being arranged by their father, Bhishma, Brahmachari Bhishma, went there on his chariot and demanded, all three daughters will come with me. Big battle ensued. Bhishma defeated everybody, including Shalva, and he came back to Hastinapur for the three daughters of the king to marry Vichitravirya. Long story. Very long story. And it's 2:25. There's no time for the long story. But Bhishma was asked by Parashuram, you marry this elder daughter or fight me, because the elder daughter had given her heart to Shalva. So she was sent to Shalva. Shalva said, no way, I can't marry you. Yes, I've given my heart to you and you to me, but I can't marry you because you've been touched by another man. Bhishma put you on his chariot and I can't marry you, be against religious principles. Shalva, right? Demons also may follow some principles of religion in order to get strong so they can do their demoniac business. So Amba got in a get-back mood towards Bhishma. One of her strategies, with a lot of detail, was to have Parashuram, his spiritual master, order him to marry the girl. In other words, it was to get the get back idea was that Bhishma would break his vow. Bhishma said, I can't break my vow. Why are you asking me to do this? It's not according to religious principles. And who would marry a girl that's pining for another man? Who would do that? So for two reasons. I'll take the second option. I'll fight with you. And Bhishma was such a powerful hero that Parashuram was defeated by Bhishma. And yet on the Kurukshetra battlefield, Arjuna defeated Bhishma, because he was empowered by Krishna to do that. By Krishna's blessing upon his devotee, the devotee can do something even the Supreme Lord cannot do. Same thing happened with grandfather Bhishma pacifying Maharaj Yudhisthira. Bhishma pacified Maharaj Yudhisthira when even Krishna couldn't pacify Maharaj Yudhisthira. Krishna likes that. Krishna likes empowering his devotee. Now, because of the time factor, I'm going to have to shorten everything that I wanted to say. But I want to go now to the first canto, chapter 9, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our topic for this visit. Here's how Grandfather Bhishma pacified Yudhisthira Maharaj. He said to Yudhisthira Maharaj, "My dear king, everything that happens, listen carefully, everything that happens is according to the will of the Supreme Lord. And who can understand the will of the Supreme Lord? Great sages, great personalities, great yogis, great mystics, great gyanis, they can understand the plan of the Supreme Lord. So, Yudhisthira, don't try to understand the plan of the Supreme Lord. This is all the plan of the Supreme Lord. Why he has this plan, you have to ask him. Because nobody knows. But one thing you can do, and this is something that each one of us can do, you evaluate your life according to three principles. What are those three principles? Very important. That the activities that you do in your life are according to the codes of religion. Theistic conduct, dharma, is very carefully followed. That's one thing you can do. And how to execute the principles of dharma? Take guidance from brahmanas and vaishnavas, qualified persons to guide you in life. And as you're doing those activities, proper activities under proper guidance, you dedicate yourself completely to the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Those three things, when they're in place, there's nothing to be lamented in your life. Whatever happens, there's no cause for despondency, lamentation, discouragement. On the other hand, if there's discrepancy in any one of those three things, you better fix the problem. But the outcome of life, the outcome of events in life, it's in the hand of the Supreme Lord. We are not the controllers. We're the servants. Krishna is the controller. He's the master. And our service is meant for him. So these are the three areas that we can check ourselves on. I'll recite them again. And he said to us, to Yudhisthira, as far as following the principles of dharma, you're perfect. You're the son of Dharmaraj. You're known as the emblem of virtue. You're Yudhisthira Maharaj. Your life is perfectly according to the codes of dharma. You get an A in your exam. And following the instructions of the brahmanas and vaishnavas, you never would have engaged in this battle except through the indication of the brahmanas and vaishnavas. Those expert persons who guide the duties of a king have guided you, and you've only done according to their indication. You get an A in your exam. And as far as being devoted to Krishna, Krishna personally wanted this to happen. He's already indicated like that. And your purpose is just to please him. A in your exam. Three A's. No F's. Perfect. Now, because the activities that you have done according to those three standards have brought about an outcome that you're not happy with, that's Krishna's plan. It was Krishna's plan to begin with, that these demoniac kings be annihilated. That's why Krishna descended in this world, and you are simply his instrument. Do not lament. Bhishma's lamentation was gone. The powerful instructions of Grandfather Bhishma, spoken with great purity, with great clarity, with great conviction, completely cleared the heart of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And this is another qualification of Maharaj Yudhisthira. We may also have the opportunity to hear the words of a very qualified person. How receptive are we? How much regard and reverence and respect do we hold that person? If we hold that person in the right way, whatever uncertainty, clarity, lack of clarity, doubt that may arise in the mind, gone. Just like Kunti, when Vidura told Kunti, don't worry, Bhima hasn't returned, he's been gone for 2 weeks' time, when he was taken by the Nagas to Nagaloka, after Duryodhan had tried to poison him. Don't worry, Vyasadeva said, when the Pandavas came back into Hastinapur, he pronounced, these sons of yours will live a very long lifetime. And Vyasadeva's words are never wrong. Don't worry. Just by hearing those words, she's a mother. One of her sons is gone. Just hearing Vidura, her anxiety was completely taken away. This is the qualified student or qualified hearer. We have so many examples of what it takes to actually advance in spiritual life, become cleared of all material conceptions and misgivings, and advance directly on the spiritual path. Qualified speaker, qualified listener, both are required. When Grandfather Bhishma spoke, empowered by Krishna, the doubt, the despondency of Maharaj Yudhisthira was gone. So we can also evaluate ourselves on these three principles. One more time. Always act according to codes of theistic conduct, which means don't deviate from them. How to apply those things should be guided by qualified Brahman and Vaishnav. A qualified spiritual preceptor must be there to guide us in our practical affairs of life. And when we do those things, they should be dedicated to Krishna's pleasure, to Krishna's satisfaction only. When those three things are there in life, whatever events unfold in our life, there's no cause for lamentation, despondency, or whatever may happen. This is the world of duality, and sometimes it comes out like this, and sometimes it comes out like that. We've all experienced both sides. We need not worry. We need to worry that our consciousness is right and our activities are proper. The path back to Godhead is then open. This is Grandfather Bhishma's teachings, glorious teachings. Hare Krishna.